students from across California are coming together to urge the legislature to pass Senate Bill 24, which would make abortion care available on public university campuses and mobilize for reproductive justice for students. Hosted by Just Care Campus Action for Reproductive Equity, the rally is Tuesday, September 3rd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. It will be at the California Capitol West Steps, that's 10th and Capitol Mall, Sacramento, California. You don't own
me. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California.
I'm Katie Morgan.
And I'm Cameron Lalana.
And you're listening to Conspiracy Comrades
on 90.3 KDVS.
I said I wasn't going to tell you what I came up with. I chose to share it with you. And I regret that immensely. Oh my God.
I'm trying to bring your creation to life.
Thank you, I guess. Yeah. I want that thing to stay dead. I thought of it for 3 seconds. I was like, ha ha. I was like, this needs to die. Okay, anyway. Conspiracies for hundreds of years have depended upon a fear of the other, an often undistinguished outgroup that represents some kind of threat to the status quo of established in-groups. These outgroups, ill-defined and at odds with the in, become embedded in local culture and legend, their differences being passed down through years of disparities and occasional conflict. Some of these groups become defined by their outgroup status, rationalizing the divide as proof of the correctness of their beliefs. Though not every such group can be called a cult, this is one of the essential features of the many cults that have speckled the American landscape. Today, we'll be talking about the groups that believed so strongly in the wrongness of the in-group that they were willing to die for it. Welcome to the cult episode. Okay. So, yeah. So we've titled this as a cult episode. We've researched a couple of different cults. Realistically, when we covered this or attempted to cover it last week when we recorded, we only got to Heaven's Gate. So probably just a promise, we're really only going to cover Heaven's Gate in this one. There's a couple more episodes that we want to give you guys before our time as a summer PA show is up. Very sad.
Very sad indeed.
Very sad. So anyway, this will likely be just a Heaven's Gate episode, but we hope it's enjoyable and super fun for you. Ideally. What?
Yeah, cool. Super fun.
I mean...
No, that's fair.
Okay, okay, let's not say fun. Let's just say interesting.
Yeah.
We provide some funny commentary, like, occasionally.
I had fun.
No, I had fun, too.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
I think sometimes we're funnier to each other than we are to other people.
I mean, that's understandable.
Yeah.
When you spend enough time, like, in a basement, in a contained environment like we have, it's a... You know, we don't need to go into what we just spent the last 20 minutes doing.
The whole point is we haven't spent the last 20 minutes doing anything. We've been laughing too hard to do anything.
I
recorded our intro about 5 times because I kept laughing in the middle of it. We're just disasters.
We did our best. It's okay. We're funny disasters, and that's why we're on air.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like all radio presenters. Okay, so Heaven's Gate.
Yes.
Heaven's Gate. With the usual charm of our subtle transitions.
Oh, yeah. They're very smooth. You can't tell where we're going.
Exactly.
Ever.
We like to keep the audience on their toes. And speaking of rough transitions, March 1997. Rancho Santa Fe police receive an anonymous tip from a caller who says that there is a group of people, a religious cult, who has killed themselves in a nearby mansion. Believing it initially to be a prank call, a police officer approaches the door, preparing an explanation for a ridiculous call that the police department had received earlier about some kind of mass suicide. But as the deputy approaches, he begins to smell something slightly off, sickly, sweet. As he looks in the windows, he notices something off, figures lying on the ground. So the deputy enters, and inside he finds 39 people dead. Each of them laid out on a mattress, wearing a black button-up shirt, black pants, black and white Nike shoes, all with the same amount of money in their pockets, and a patch that says, Away Team, on their shirts. All the bodies are covered in a purple shroud. This was the end of the Heaven's Gate cult. But to understand how they came to this point, we're going to have to go all the way back to the early 1970s. and to a man called, at that time, Marshall Applewhite.
Sorry, I'm like totally entranced by all the stuff you're saying. I was going to say, we've spent a lot of time researching this, and I've just sat here and like open mouth listened to you saying all of that. Okay.
Thank you.
So, of course. So, Heaven's Gate, as the cult that it was, began near San Diego in California, obviously. So it was founded in 1974, which is obviously quite a bit of time before the thing that it's really known for, the infamous 1997 suicide. Mm-hmm. So it was founded by, like you said, Marshall Applewhite, who was formerly a professor at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, in Texas. And Bonnie Lou Nettles, who was a married nurse. Mm. So,
and Applewhite and Nettles met in probably the worst, not the worst way possible, but in really unfortunate circumstances.
Right. So essentially, Applewhite had a very, what I'll call, you know, like a stereotypical American dream style life. You know, he had a wife, he had a couple kids, he had a good, you know, professor job at this nice university. And back at this time, like I said, it was like early 70s. He was actually fired from the university over an alleged relationship with one of his male students. And he was actually institutionalized because 70s people suck.
Yeah.
A lot. And that's actually where he met Bonnie Nettles. She was his nurse in psychiatric ward. Mm. So they basically just started kind of, you know, philosophizing together, kind of talking about, you know, theology, a couple of things. Some of the teachings they focused on were Christology, which is literally just the understanding of Christ.
Of which they came to a very particular understanding.
Yes. Eschatology, which is a major branch of study within Christian theology dealing with the, quote, last things. And basically kept a King James Bible with them all the time, spent a lot of time talking about theology, the afterlife, things like that. So they basically just clicked, you know, they spent a lot of time together, you know, they had this deep understanding of each other. And this eventually, some people called it a sexless partnership, which is very much what something we'll cover about the cult a little bit later. But, you know, they had this very close bond in considering, you know, what the afterlife was like. So they spent just a lot of time together. They began, you know, to put together Heaven's Gate with all its members.
Mm. Right.
They ended up with about 200 people.
Over the course of the next 20 years, right? After Applewhite got out of the psychiatric ward, they stole a car and began crisscrossing the nation.
Yes. Yes, that is true. So, yeah, they essentially, by 1974, the two of them had created this basic outline of what they thought Christianity and the afterlife was like. And at this point, they wanted to fulfill these, you know, grand biblical kind of prophecies that they had, you know, come up with. Mm. They often referred to themselves as the two or the UFO two. Mm. There's a pamphlet that they wrote together that described Jesus's reincarnation as that of a Texan, obviously referring to Applewhite.
A very particular Texan.
Right, exactly.
As Katie said, Applewhite.
Right, kind of, you know, establishing, you know, this narrative of Applewhite is kind of this, you know, God-like, Jesus-like figure.
Right, as Applewhite would later say, essentially, Jesus was the name of the vessel into which the mind, which came from the kingdom of heaven, took over. And then after that body was done, the mind returned to heaven and 2,000 years later would come to inhabit the body, which was once known as Marshall Applewhite.
Right.
So after saying that, in a very reasonable follow-up says, is that mind in me? You'll have to decide that for yourself.
Right. So this very, you know, odd couple, if you will, you know, canvassing the nation, finding these people that believe in them.
Right. Because they would stop in cities.
Right.
And they would have events like UFO discussion events, and people would show up. And some of them happen to be kind of lonely and looking for a greater purpose in life.
Right. That was a big thing about the cult was it was a very, you know, familial structure. kind of setup where it's like these people were each other's family 100%. You know, there's a lot of, you know, documented evidence of, you know, all of them before the mass suicide, they all, you know, sat down, recorded tapes and said, you know, my family thinks I'm crazy, but I really believe that, you know, in order to ascend to heaven, I have to leave my, you know, earthly vessel right now, you know, to obtain some kind of afterlife. And they all seem, you know, very, as far as, you know, brainwashed kind of culty things go, they all seemed very, you know, yeah, this is what I want to do. You know, I'm excited about this.
Happy, content.
Yeah, they all seemed very calm for the fact that they were all going to be dead in, mm-hmm. you know, 24 hours, which that's also, I don't know about you, but when I watched those videos, I had just this really eerie sense. It's like, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you see things from people who have died like years ago and you like feel some kind of weird like connection to it. Like, I don't know. It was just really strange, like seeing those people talking and moving around and laughing and like knowing that they were going to be dead in like 24 hours. That was super weird to me.
Yeah. Especially when you, because they almost speak to you as a watcher of these videos. They point out that they know that this is not going to be portrayed the way that they understand it. One of them says, we know that they're not going to present it the way that we'd like it to be presented. Essentially, they understand that the media is going to have a certain perspective on their mass suicide. They, another person in these interviews says, they, referring to Applewhite and Nettles, who at this point were going by T and Doe, they're not who the media is going to make them out to be. So they're aware of how we perceive them, and they're almost talking to you as a watcher.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that the way that they have recorded these videos, it's obviously, I think it's a little bit for, you know, family and friends and things like that, but I think generally speaking, they knew that people were going to be seeing these outside of, you know, like immediate family. Like, they knew that this was going to go on the news and probably be broadcasted all over the place. And it's very, I'll say, disconcerting. I don't know. Like I said, it's just, it was really weird for me to watch. I don't know why. It was fascinating, but I just felt this eerie sense of, you know,
maybe we have this image of cults as something kind of oppressive, people who are following by fear, something we imagine the Manson family and being afraid of the leader. We don't sit down and imagine a group of people who are really quite happy with their lives, who are very fulfilled with the and meaning that they derive from their family and from the teachings of Applewhite, and that they were happy to do this. This was not something that they were coerced into, which is a frightening thought that you can quite of your own volition and quite happily walk into such a situation.
Right. Yeah. So I'll go on to a little bit about kind of the daily life of the cult. Not so much daily life, but, you know, kind of some more just general information about them. So like I said before, they had assembled somewhere around 200 followers by the time it was kind of like at its peak. There were a lot of very stern rules surrounding, you know, sex, smoking, drinking, drugs, things like that, where it was just very much not allowed. It was a very, you know, straightforward kind of cult. You know, there was no kind of sinning to be had. And a big thing that they sort of followed as well was androgyny for everybody. Everyone had really short, kind of gender neutral haircuts. You know, everyone wore oversized clothes, so you couldn't like really see anything on anybody's person. It was just like, you know, a block of clothes. And then actually something that I thought was, I'll use the word interesting because I'm not sure how to describe this, but Applewhite and at least five other men in the group actually underwent castration to prove their commitment to the androgynous part of the cult, which I think is really interesting.
Right.
I don't know. But so, yeah, there's kind of just the everyday of them. They were very much, you know, I'll say Puritan, just very, you know, no drinking, no sex, no drugs, et cetera, et cetera.
Many, many rules. If you go to their website, which is still functioning today,
it looks like the most 1997 website you could possibly imagine.
You look at this website and think, yeah, those website designers did die in the 1990s.
Oh my God.
You can look at their materials of various teaching materials, videos, transcripts, and on that, in that section, you can find a list of major and lesser offenses, which are all guidelines and rules for how you have to live your day-to-day life. For example, there are 3 major offenses and about 31 lesser offenses. So the 3 major offenses are deceit, sensuality, and then breaking any instruction or procedure knowingly. And it doesn't elaborate on what exactly making that offense, what the consequence of that is, but there are clear guides to what you should and should not be doing, and which is an essential feature of a cult. Obviously, if you were too independent, you wouldn't be in a cult.
Yeah.
So through these next 20 years, as Nettles and Applewhite, who are now going by the name, as I mentioned before, Doe and T, were crisscrossing the country, going to places, bring followers with them. There were several events, major disappearances of groups of people, which were noted in the news, which were connected to this cult because they would just leave their lives and follow Doe and T as they pursued their mission of trying to ascend, because they believed the earth was going to be recycled. So they began their path of essentially trying to attain a nirvana by purifying themselves, getting rid of human instincts.
Right. Yeah. A big kind of push in this direction was actually Nettles dies in 1985 of cancer. And a lot of people say this is a big jumping off point for Applewhite. Kind of it makes him think about his own mortality a little bit more than usual, I think. So at this point, he actually really starts thinking about, how am I going to make it to the afterlife? How are all of our followers going to make it to the afterlife? What's the plan here, basically?
Right.
So the group, kind of in the early 90s, like, they have a website design firm.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting. but so they go through the early 90s, you know, being Heaven's Gate, you know, trying to prep for doomsday, all the good stuff.
Right.
And then in 1995 is when the group first, well, Applewhite first learns of the Hale-Bopp comet, which is a big catalyst into the eventual suicides in a few years.
Right.
So this comet, basically Applewhite saw this and was like, oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's it, baby. That's what
That's it, baby.
That's it, baby. Yeah. So it was, you know, that was the big sign.
That was the spaceship.
Right.
One of the major features of the Heaven's Gate theology, it's very heavily based in Christianity.
Yeah.
But it's not quite as spiritual in a weird way. As Applewhite points out in one of his videos, the kingdom of heaven is as physical as the stars. Essentially, it's the next stage of evolution, or it's a stage that humans can't quite comprehend. So when he sees the Hale-Bopp comet, what he's seeing is a spaceship, because heaven for him exists essentially in a spacefaring peoples who are roaming about the galaxy doing various jobs, working for the Heavenly Father, who was in the body of T. Who was the father that brought Doe, him, the mind of Jesus, back into reality. And the Hale-Bopp comet was going to come back around, and that was their chance to leave their human forms and ascend to the next realm, the next stage of evolution.
Right. So, kind of in preparation for this, so a couple months before, so October 1996, the cult began to rent a large home, which they actually called the Monastery.
Very on the nose with a lot of these names.
Exactly.
They also called their group the Crew, which, pretty on point. If you're going to be a cult, it's a good name for, like, how you refer to your lackeys.
I think that's hilariously casual. Oh, it's me and my crew.
Me and the crew.
Me and the crew.
Yeah, very Star Trek-y overtones.
Right, exactly. No, everything about this cult is very Star Trek-y, which, I mean, I think we'll probably cover in a little bit. But
yeah,
it's all very, very Star Trek-y for some reason. But anyway, so they begin to rent the monastery. So it's in Rancho Santa Fe, California. They're paying $7,000 per month in cash for rent, which is so much rent money. I guess for, you know, 41 of them, that's not bad.
Not bad.
But still. So another kind of thing they did before the suicide, which I think it's really funny. I feel kind of bad for laughing. The group actually purchased alien abduction insurance.
Which is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
And you can still buy it.
You absolutely can. It's great. So it covers up to 50 members and would pay out $1 million per person. This policy covered abduction, impregnation, or death by aliens, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. For those of you wondering, there are at least three agencies from which you can purchase this insurance. I'm not going to name them for you because I don't think you should do this.
We did a deep dive. It was really fun, though.
It was a very good deep dive.
Yeah.
At least one of the agencies has confirmed that they have paid out at least once.
That's amazing.
For alien abduction. But the only catch is that although it does promise about $10 million, it only promises that $1 a year for the next 10 million years.
Which I think is a huge loophole.
Yeah, right?
Can you imagine living to like 80? It's like, here's your $60.
Yeah.
Like, pff, sheesh.
Yeah. What's the intersection of people who are willing to take a dollar a year? Like, this is an amount that's a joke, but also are take it so seriously that they will sign up for alien abduction insurance and also pursue that claim.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway.
Oh, my God. Anyway. So I just thought that was really funny. I think objectively, in this case, it's a very smart thing to do,
yeah.
Like, relatively speak. I mean, as far as alien-based cults go,
yeah.
It's probably a pretty smart choice, realistically.
Yeah.
Kudos to them, I suppose. So so these suicides take place. We're getting to the suicides part now. So it took place over a couple of days in March of 1997. So on the 19th of March, Applewhite tapes himself, what's now known as Doe's final exit. So it's about an hour, right, of him
right.
just talking about Heaven's Gate, talking about the afterlife, you know, talking about all kinds of fun things.
About how the Earth's going to be recycled.
Right.
About how the only hope for people on this, in this iteration of the Earth, he believes that the Earth goes through cycles where it's just periodically destroyed, recycled, and comes back, and human life comes back. It's kind of like a weirdly... I don't know if it's accurate to say this is like kind of Buddhist in that you continue being reincarnated into a human body in successive iterations until you become good enough to ascend to the next realm, of which Doe hopes to be good enough to ascend from this realm at this time.
Right. I don't know if we fully mentioned this earlier, but essentially the whole view on human bodies in Heaven's Gate is that this is a vessel to get you to the next life.
Mm.
So a big part of that was... You know, they have another thing about this on their website, actually, about how they don't want to call this suicide because to them it's not killing themselves. It's allowing their souls to leave Earth to then go, you know, to the next life.
Right.
Which is not a view that I echo personally. But
don't try to join the comments,
kids. Please don't. Please.
Look, if we've tried to make this clear enough, Heaven's Gate, this cult is about the opposite of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So, you know, what's the point?
Okay. So, essentially, yeah, during this big old hour-long speech, he just kind of explains, you know, the justification for everything that they're doing. You know, he says it's the only way to evacuate this Earth. So... A bunch of, like I said, you can find a bunch of tapes online of all these members talking to a camera about, you know, what's going on and like how they feel about it and things like that. So mm-hmm. every single member taped this like a farewell message
mm-hmm.
To themselves before they went through with this. So essentially to start this process off, everyone took phenobarbital mixed with either applesauce or pudding. Mm-hmm. And then they washed it down with vodka. And then afterwards, they tied plastic bags around their heads to induce asphyxiation in themselves. So, like we said before, they were all dressed in, you know, identical black, like kind of tunic things, black sweatpants, black and white Nikes. And then everyone eventually had a purple shroud over them.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them actually had armbands with patches reading Heaven's Gate Away Team. Like we said, this is a very Star Trek-focused
right.
cult.
They also had computers around the house
mm-hmm.
on which they had Star Trek graphics and a flashing sign which said Red Alert. So there's a certain sense of humor. I think they probably watched a fair amount of Star Trek. I did not get into exactly what TV shows they didn't watch because there's a very specific list, but I imagine Star Trek is, in fact, on it.
Right. Yes. So each person that died had a $5 bill and three quarters on their person. It says the $5 bill was to cover vagrancy fines while members were out on jobs, and then the quarters were to make phone calls. So just interesting things.
Yeah.
So these suicides took place over 3 days. Well, between approximately the 22nd and the 26th of March. So all these suicides took place in groups of 15, 15, and then 9. So each group that died, the next group would then take off the bag off their heads and then place that that shroud over the body, arrange it nicely. That's why when you see all those, you know, classic pictures of Heaven's Gate members in the mansion, they look like they just fell asleep with something on their faces. Mm. You know, it's like they look very peaceful. You would think everyone would look, you know, kind of lopsided and kind of like, you know, they took phenobarbital and, you know, couldn't breathe and then just died. But that was the whole point of kind of doing it in, you know, shifts, sort of, was that everything looked very calm. Everything was very laid out.
Right.
Very methodical.
Cots, beds, everywhere. Everything is very intentionally done.
Yes, exactly. So like we said, 39 people are dead, including Applewhite. He was the third to last member to die. So two people stayed after he died, and they actually were the only ones that were found without bags over their heads or purple cloths over their faces. And then following that, that's the reason why we have so many of those like videos and pictures now, is they actually sent a whole bunch of videos and it's VHS tapes because it's 1997.
Yeah.
To friends, family. They actually do send one box to the BBC.
And that contains Doe's final message and the final interviews, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes. So it's just a very interesting story. I think when we hear about something like this, we're like, wow, that's really strange. Like, what happened here? That's so tragic. And then we see those videos and we see how, like, kind of relatively stoked these people are to be like, yeah, I'm going on to something else, dude. Like, this is great. And I think it's vaguely eerie to us, because I think a lot of us would be like, oh, like, cold mass suicide doesn't really sound like something I'm really into. But, I mean, for them, it was just like, yeah, this is what I want to do. These are the people I want to be with.
Right.
You know, this is where I want to go.
The life I was leading before was not fulfilling to me. I was sad. I was depressed. I felt trapped. And now I feel free. There are options for me. I know where I'm going and I know who I'm doing with.
Right.
I believe you had one last thing you wanted to say to close this out.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the quotes from Applewhite during his really long, you know, exit tape. So he just says, we're about to return to whence we came. I can lead you into that kingdom level above human. That can't happen unless you leave the human world that you're in and come and follow me. Time is short. Last chance.
For now, we'll leave you at that. As always, on a cheery note, unfortunately, because it's almost
the cheeriest of notes.
Yeah, that's how we do it here.
Yeah.
Since it's almost 5 o'clock, we're going to have to bring the show to a close. As always, I've been Cameron LaLana.
I'm Katie Morgan, and you've been listening to The Conspiracy Comrades. Our outro music is Heaven's Gate by Fall Out Boy. You'll hear us again next week.
What are we covering then, Katie?
The moon landing.
Hell yeah.
I think.
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah, we'll see.
We don't make promises, guys. We've learned better.
We've really learned.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it'll be about the moon landing next week.
Hopefully. So that's
we'll
the goal.
See. Anyway, have a good evening, y'all.
Have a great evening. We will see you next week.
Maybe.
What?
I don't know. We thought we were going to be here last week, too.
Oh, I mean, we tried.
We did. We did our best, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then some other things happened.
Yeah.
Namely, my failure to upload.
Ah, it's okay.
It happens.
That's all right.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Okay, see ya.
The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Good afternoon, listeners. This is Francisco Dominguez, your host for the day, Radio Informar. Really happy to be here today. Hope you're having a great afternoon. I know it's cooled off a little bit, so that's good for all of us. You know, we have a very special guest today. It's a good friend of mine from we go way back, and his name is Vincent Cobelt, and he's an alumni here from UC Davis. Like I said last week, we had an art group here called the Putatoy Artists Liberation Front, and we used to do poetry readings, art shows. So we're going to start off with some Jimmy Cliff, and we're going to be right back. We got Vincent in the studio, and he's going to read some poetry. We're going to talk, and he's gonna throw it all the way down right here live on KDVS. So we'll be right back. We're playing some Jimmy Cliff, Many Rivers to Cross, because we are in some very tough times. I always say on the radio, we are in a time of distress in this country. And so listen to Jimmy Cliff, one of the all-time great, great reggae musicians. We'll be right back. The great Jimmy Cliff.
My woman left and she didn't say why.